The scripture today is from Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These two Moabite wives, the name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. When they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
And when I told Debbie that it was only five verses, little did she know there were all those names. Just like that, right? And just like that, seasons change. Have you ever had that happen to you? It happens out in the natural world all the time. In Loma, Montana, David and Vicky, you may know where that is. January 14th, 1972, there was a Chinook wind that pushed the temperature from Loma from 54 degrees below zero at 9 a.m. to 49 degrees above zero. Get this, in just 1 hour. Are you kidding? Just like that, spring. Those are kind of good weather changes, I would say. But it happens the other way, too. West Texas, another just an hour, the temperature had plummeted 44 degrees to a chilly 23 degrees. And just like that, again. And by another hour, it was zero. Again, sometimes seasons change just like that. And sometimes it's not always good. When I was a pastor in Vermilion, South Dakota, I got a call about 3 a.m. And as a pastor, you just know that call is not going to be good at 3 a.m. Nobody's selling Amway and trying to, you know, get you to buy something at 3 a.m. And this call was from a mother in our church, and she had a kid in college, and he was coming home from a party on a Friday night, and he got in a car accident. And his two friends survived, but he didn't. Just like that. And then sometimes you think that old statement, you know, God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. Well, you know that's a myth. We can throw that one out, right? Because sometimes it happens, right? A year later, same voice at the phone, 3 in the morning, almost exactly to the date. Same mother, only this time she was weeping because of her nephew, her sister's 21-year-old, was coming home from a party, got in a car accident, and didn't make it. How could that happen? Just like that. My Aunt Angelica, who came from Germany, if anybody used to say something like, God doesn't give you anything you can't handle, you'd appreciate this, Carl. I know you're from Germany, so originally, but she had a response to that I can't even say out loud because it was a lot of words in German that she told us never to repeat. But my dad always said, that's a bunch of bull roar. That was as good as he got in swearing. But let me tell you, sometimes life can get pretty messy, right? Pretty tough. Two beautiful 21-year-old men gone, just like that. What can we do, you and I, when that happens to people around us? Well, one thing we can do is we can throw out that myth. And another thing is we could read the book of Ruth, because it's all about this type of a situation. Naomi and her husband, Elimelech, and two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, were in a pickle. There was a famine in Israel, their home country. Food was scarce. The judges, the council that led the country at that time, they didn't care about anybody but themselves. Just read the book before, the book of Judges, right at the end. There was no attempt at compromise back then between the judges, those who were ruling the country. There was no listening among them, and there wasn't any sense of God in the midst of them. In other words, they were just all in it for themselves. Here's how the end of Judges, the book right before Ruth, puts it. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every human being did what which was right in his or her own eyes. Sometimes you kind of wonder, don't you, if history always has to repeat itself, you know? How many people in our country, in our world, just looking out for themselves? Anyway, there was no compassion or care in Israel. And just like so many of our asylum seekers here in Seattle, Naomi and Elimelech took their family and headed up north to the hill country. They crossed the border. How risky was that? And tried to make do in a foreign land. And they did pretty well at first. Mahlon and Chilion had found wives, and they're in this foreign land, and they seemed to be pretty nice. And just a little while later, it was spring and summer, and they were just really getting along, basking in the blessings of the Lord in this new country. And then all of a sudden, winter struck, just like that. Elimelech died, and the next year, we don't know how, maybe a wolf attacked them out in the fields when they were watching the sheep, but Mahlon and Chilion, they died suddenly. And suddenly, Naomi and Ruth and Orpah were all alone. And, you know, that would be hard in any society. But in the society back then, when the men had all the power, where the men were relied upon always to kind of get the money in and do all of that, and women worked very hard, but they just didn't have power, it was very vulnerable to be alone as a woman. Just like that. From 67 degrees to zero. No wonder Naomi, which means pleasantness. By the way, if you're ever reading the Old Testament, pay attention to the names. Find out what they mean, because they say a lot in the story. So she starts out as Naomi, pleasantness. You know, she's a beautiful, pleasant woman. But suddenly her name is changed to Mara, which means bitter. Now, who wouldn't turn bitter in a moment like that? Who among us hasn't tasted the bitterness of a divorce, or the sharp acidic bite of losing a child, or the caustic sour sting of being let go from a job you've given your all for 20 years in? Life comes at us sometimes with fistfuls of daggers, and one of the things we have to watch out for in those times, and this is what I often pray for when people are going through this, I do pray for protection for them, but really I'm praying for the protection of their heart, because that's the most vulnerable organ in times of trouble and darkness, because that bad experience just has a way of clawing in to that heart and making people bitter and angry and upset. And sometimes that's okay to go through that. In fact, I think we have to sometimes, right? But when it lingers and stays the whole time and doesn't seem to go away, that vinegar, sour smell in our heart that depression or darkness that can come, that night, that's tough stuff. One of the things that happens to us when seasons in our lives turn so quickly is that we get thrown out into the wilderness. Anybody ever been there in that wilderness? We don't necessarily do it intentionally, but we find ourselves outside of our communities often in those times. We enter church and the church is singing a hymn or praise song all about joy, 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 and we're going, ah, come on. That's not me. Do I have to fake it? You know? We hear the song, bless the Lord, oh my soul, oh my soul. You're rich in love, you're slow to anger. Your name is great and your heart is kind. For all your goodness, I'll keep on singing. Keep on singing? I can hardly open my mouth without spitting out some anger. Really? You say. And that would be okay, you know, those songs, if there was a song somewhere in our liturgy that talked a little bit about pain or a little bit about the absence of God, because we all feel it sometimes. Surely Arena Murray has a beautiful song called Wounded World That Cries for Healing. Here we hold each other's pain, honor those whose loving spirit nurses hope, restores, and heals. Towel and basin used in service like the Christ who comes and kneels. Songs like that, that talk about the reality of life. But let's be honest, there aren't too many churches and church communities that have much patience for pain. We have a hard time sitting in it for too long, right? And we need somebody who's going to sit with us for a while. And so those who don't recover quickly, how can we be there for them when they're going through this, when they're thrown out into the wilderness? They're kind of like a piece of clay on a pottery wheel. Have you ever worked pottery? I did in college. And if you didn't get that piece of clay centered on there just right, and the wheel started going around, pretty soon it just spin out and be thrown out, right? Well, those kind of events throw us off center, and so we get thrown off the wheel sometime. And that's what happens to so many of us when we experience the pain that Naomi experiences. We get thrown out into the wilderness, and that could be a dangerous place for us because it lacks water, it lacks a place of grace, and we slowly... We don't turn to butter, we turn to bitter. Or we let depression take us. And our big question at that time is one that we often ask, and it's hard for our community to hear. Where are you, God? Where are you? How come God didn't pick me up? How come God didn't protect my daughter or son from having cancer? And out in the wilderness, we have this crazy idea that God isn't there. So we stop looking for grace, for love, for that river that runs through it, or maybe even underneath it. And here's the hard part I want to just say is sometimes we let that bitterness, just like Naomi did, we let that bitterness start naming us, steal our name, steal who we really are. We're no longer Naomi Pleasantness. We turn in not only into a bitter person, but we are that name. And that's when it gets tough, right? It's hard to shed it, too. In our Monday night book study, we're reading this book by Sarah Bessie called Field Notes for the Wilderness. I love this book. So many great examples of how people have learned to navigate in the wilderness. And one of the things she tries to tell us is, God's in the wilderness too. That's the lie we've been told, that out in the wilderness, you know, there is no God. There's no water. There's nothing there. But she says that's wrong. And in the first chapter, she tells about one of her great wilderness experiences. She was living with her husband in Texas. Both her and her husband are working for the church in different capacities, one in Christian spiritual formation, one as a counselor. And one day, one of them her, Sarah, gets fired from her job. Evidently, she shared a little too honestly about her pain and struggle, and the community in which she wrote for did not appreciate it, and so she got fired. And then the next week, her husband, who was sharing a sermon with the congregation, shared some of his honest experience, and that church didn't like it either, and so he got fired too. Both of them fired. They weren't from Texas, they were from Canada, and so they decided to try to go back home, so they packed all their stuff in a U-Haul, you know, and this old U-Haul, if you can imagine, and started traveling back home. And if you're going back home from Texas, you got to go through, you know, Arizona. And Arizona in the summertime, some of you have lived there. Some of you have been through it in the summertime. It's hot. And that old U-Haul, the air conditioner just can't keep up with the heat. And so they decide to turn it off, and they roll down the windows, and they are just sweating all over. And she's originally from Canada. By the way, Danielle Walsh has a son, Grady, who went down for the first time to visit his sister, who was going to school at TCU down in Texas, in Fort Worth. And he had never been down south. And he got off the plane, and he just said, "Oh, what's happening to me? What is this? What is this?" And Danielle turned and said, "That, my friend, is humidity." Well, this Arizona stuff for this gal from Canada and this Texas stuff, it was always just too hot all the time. And she was so frustrated with all this heat, and she was frustrated with the experience she was having, and she was mad at God for allowing her and her husband to be fired, and she was just so frustrated, felt like God was nowhere in sight. If you've ever been fired, that's a feeling that's real. And all of a sudden, they stopped at a convenience store, 7-Eleven or something, and she was in tears, just so angry, and they stopped for a moment, and they just listened, and they thought, "Do we hear water running?" And they looked at the faucet behind there was no faucet running behind the 7-Eleven, and then they started walking. And they noticed there was a gully that was covered up in trees there in Arizona. I thought, "Trees? What are they doing here?" And they slid down the gully, and there was a beautiful little stream. And they found themselves wading into that stream. And the woman began, Sarah, she started to realize that, "Wait a minute, God is here. I couldn't see God, but here is God in this stream. Here's grace." And it gave her a symbolic understanding of the wilderness. The wilderness doesn't have to be a place of just desert. There can be places of grace in the middle of that. I wonder if the person writing this wonderful story, Sarah, knew the story of Naomi. A story of a woman who started out feeling blessed and beautiful, but finding through the struggles of her life, renamed by all those struggles as bitter Mara. Maybe she knew a little of Naomi's struggle and the rest of this story. That God didn't have to be named out in the wilderness, because if you read the book of Ruth, you will not find God named. God's not there, not named, right? Read the book of Ruth. God's not named. But if you pay attention to the lower right part of the page, you will notice God showing up in one of the most unusual, ironic, and unexpected ways possible. In a world full of a patriarchal, male-dominated world, in a world that worshiped God as king and warrior and destroyer and miraculous parter of the Red Sea, God in this book shows up unnamed, but fully present in a poor peasant woman from another country. She doesn't even know Israel's God fully. And yet, by saying she refused to leave Mara in the desert, she begins to show all of us how God really walks through the tough stuff with us. By being there, by refusing to let go of the most needy, God in this story comes to us in one of the least of us. Who else said that? Can't quite remember. And that is why my preaching professor from Perkins School of Theology, John C. Holbert, says this about this story. In the face of rampant patriarchy and thorough rejection, Ruth still clings to Naomi and vows grandly never to leave. In short, Ruth is very like the Yahweh she has chosen to embrace, a Yahweh that will never depart from us and will forever offer to us chesed, an unbreakable love, which will never leave us alone. In this wonderful story, God is a Moabite widow, which, it could be said, is one patriarchal mouthful to be said, and in which Jesus embraced by being born where? In a manger, and calling us to see him as who? As the naked one, and the hungry one, and the least. May we learn to see, and all the people.